Good morning. It's 9:08, Wednesday, October 3rd, 2012. I'll call our Dallas City Council briefing meeting to order. Kick us off, we have Reverend Bill Matthews of the United Methodist Church. He's retired from his official church duties, but I see him all over town. He's very active in the community. Reverend Matthews is involved with the United Nations Association, where he serves as president of the Texas Division. Thanksgiving Foundation, where he is the chair of the Interfaith Council, and he is a board member of the DFW International Community Alliance. He represents our city well as we strive to be diverse, peaceful, and have tremendous intercultural exchanges. He's a big believer in ecumenical movement, and Reverend Matthews, thank you for being here, and thank you for what you do for the Thanksgiving Foundation. It represents Dallas well at the United Nations and other places as well. So if Reverend Matthews will lead us, and then Ms. Margolin will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you very much. I'm sharing with you today my peacemaker's prayer. We give thanks, O God, to the higher power, the ground of our being, the one God of many names, for the plenteous abundance of life we have received, for knowledge, for understanding and enlightenment, for insight and wisdom, even for money, but also for compassion and the acceptance of forgiveness for ourselves and for our neighbors, whom we are created to love. We humbly ask that we be given more, the will to serve, courage to act, and strength of character, that we may perform with honesty, preserve integrity, and comprehend the coherence to put it all together. Let us petition the Most High to so transform us in mind, body, and spirit that we may establish islands of calm in the midst of monstrous seas, to make real the strong relationship with the source of life today and for ages unto ages. We pray in the beauty of holiness. Amen.
Amen. Ms. McGowan?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Matthews, and I love your prayer, and I love your voice as well. Yeah, we can't talk. Okay. Ms. Alonzo? Monica? Okay. All right, ma'am.
I'll go ahead and do.
Okay, go ahead.
Say thanks to Councilmember Alonso and Councilmember Hasso in joining me in celebrating National Hispanic Month this morning. We had a Latin trio entertaining us this morning, and we also had a nice breakfast for our employees to help with celebrating the National Hispanic Month. And then I'm going to hand it over to Ms. Alonso, and then Ms. Hasso will let us know what we'll be doing at noon. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. And we want to thank everyone that participated, and we want to make sure that we celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month, September 15th through October 15th, and also recognize not only Latinos that are on the screen as well as all of us, but that we're continuing to remember where we come from.
Ms. Hasso. Thank you, Mayor. Again, it was a very, very classical and nice event today. We said this year no sombreros, so we had a jazz trio. Today at noon, we will be welcoming the cast and crew of Dallas The producer, Ken Topolsky, the writer, Cynthia Cidre, who is Cuban, and one of the actresses, Julie Gonzalo, who I believe is from Brazil. So I invite all of you to come and walk the red carpet with us to welcome our cast and crew of Dallas. They're hard at work, but they are graciously accepting our invitation to be here at noon. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms.
In the lobby.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Awesome.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for that. Thank you. We got a quorum now. All right. Mr. Allen has an important announcement today. Thank you.
All right. This is not only is an important announcement, it's an honor. It's an honor to be able to stand up and get ready to talk about what we're getting ready to talk about. You know, Mayor, I believe it was just 2 days ago you were out at kicked off the Live United Day. You were out there. I saw you in the newspapers. You look good.
Thank you.
It was
my haircut that I got the bridge.
And that was a good haircut. That was a good haircut. The If I could get Jennifer Sampson, president of United Way, and if you're from Texas Instruments, all of you from Texas Instruments, if y'all be so kind to come on up here. Yeah, if all of you from Texas Instruments. Y'all come on up here. All right. We talked about just 2 days ago where it kicked off, Ms. Hampton kicked off the Live United Day. And when you think about the words Live United, I can't think of any better way of saying really one of the reasons that we're a lot of us that are here today. It really kind of gets back to the second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. But Live United, come together. Live united. You do more when you're together. I sound like a preacher, don't I? But anyway, on Monday there was, they kicked off the Live United Day, and that was a celebration. Starting a celebration because you got over 95,000 people that contribute. Not only money, but their time, their energy, volunteer to the United Way effort. Affecting countless numbers of folks' life that do not even know that people out there really care that much about them. But countless numbers of lives are being affected. It's raising people when it comes to the educational component. Education, getting our kids out there, the after-school components that y'all do, the poverty that you do, where we're raising for financial literacy that's out there, protecting our people against predatory folks and educating them just so they'll have a better quality of life for their kids, educating them so they'll educate their kids. The health, we're getting ready today. We're gonna learn a little bit about CPR, but what you guys are doing on the health issues and such is on the leading edge. It literally becomes, quite frankly, we can even look at it as a business model from the standpoint you're out there helping the city because the efforts that y'all do with the health issues where you're getting our people to start to go to permanent health care where they have somebody instead of an EMS, a transaction. You're getting them to come to our clinics and such. You're saving the citizens of Dallas money that we can in turn come back into and put back in for better quality of life. What's so good about it is, too, you're able to partner. And you're standing up here with TI, Texas Instruments. Texas Instruments, Mayor, we were out there last Monday, and the mayor had a initiative that he started. It's been going on for a while. An initiative for folks with, I call them special abilities. Some call disabilities, called special abilities. And they have a job fair every year. TI, Texas Instruments, leads the way on that job fair. They were out there last Monday. The mayor was out there kicking the speech off on that. So Texas Instruments, you're always out there, out front, leading the way. I noticed y'all were one of three sponsors that did over $3 million to United Way. And that's your corporate heart that you have, but it's also your employees that you have. So what a corporate citizen. We're the city of Dallas and North Texas is just blessed to have you guys here with us. I'm going to read a quick proclamation, and I'm going to have a couple of you ladies say some words to us on this thing. But this is a City of Dallas special recognition, and it goes like this. Whereas United Way of Metropolitan Dallas has been improving the lives in the City of Dallas since 1924, and whereas contributions of financial resources and volunteer time to United Way help prepare more kids to graduate and succeed, help more families leave poverty and permanently, and enable more people to the healthy, responsible lives. And whereas more than 95,000 North Texans donated to United Way each year to improve the communities where they live and where they work, and whereas community volunteers give nearly 14,000 hours of their time to evaluate the best ways to invest gifts to the United Way community so that every dollar given makes the biggest possible impact, and whereas breaking the destructive cycle of dropout, poverty, and poor health in North Texas depends on engaging the entire community. And that is why we call it Live United, engaging the entire community. Whereas United Way invites all residents of the City of Dallas to participate in Live United Day and join tens of thousands of United Way supporters who give, advocate, and volunteer. And whereas together we can inspire more people in the community to join the United Way effort to change the lives of hundreds of thousands of North Texans forever. Therefore, I, Mike Rollins, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition on this third day of October 2012 to United Way of Metropolitan Dallas, and in honor of this observance by sharing the United Way message through public displays of support and by connecting friends and family with United Way of Metropolitan Dallas. Ms. Sampson, could I get you to come up here and just say a few words?
Thank you so much, Councilman. Thank you, and thank you all. On behalf of Rich Templeton, our community-wide campaign chair and CEO and chairman of Texas Instruments, the TI team, my staff team here from United Way, our board of directors, special thanks to the City of Dallas, especially special thanks to you, Mayor Rawlings, for coming out for Live United Day and your Live United t-shirt, which looks fantastic. We are changing lives forever in North Texas because of your support, and we want Dallas, North Texas, this entire region to be the very best place to live, work, and raise families. And with your continued support, we believe the best is yet to come. So thank you so much for your support today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
With your leadership, there's no question about that. Ms. West, would you come on up here and say a few words?
Mayor Rawlings, Councilman Allen, City Council members, thank you for letting us be here today, and thank you most of all for making Dallas a city that cares. At TI, the people of TI are proud to call Dallas our headquarters and our home, and it is with great pleasure that we're here today to thank you for the proclamation. TI is proud to stand with United Way to help change lives forever, but it's not just TI. There's hundreds of companies in Dallas who also call Dallas home, and they too stand with United Way. So thank you for this special event and special day. We appreciate it.
Big time.
Thank you.
I tell you, you got Texas Instruments and United Way. You can't go wrong, can you? The only thing you need to add a little bit more to, and I got to plug it, is earned income tax credits are out there and taking advantage of earned income tax credits. Am I right?
That's right.
All right. We've got the proclamation right here. Could I get the council to come up here, Mayor, and let's get us a quick picture. And if you're from United Way and TI, anybody left over, y'all come on up here with us. We want all of you to get right up here.
Thank you, Jerry, for that proclamation. And Jennifer, thank you for what we're doing at United Way. United Way has always been a great partner in Dallas, but I think it's getting more focused strategically on the big issues that are facing us. And you can feel great if you give money to United Way that it is going to the big issues that Dallas faces and making tremendous progress. The other thing is I want to recognize Rich Templeton. There are so many people that think that business CEOs just are out there for their own good, and Rich is not that case. He's stepping up in a major leadership fashion, an important citizen in Dallas, to be able to have a CEO of this quality lead this effort is an example of what Dallas leaders are supposed to do, and hopefully more and more of them will do that in the future. So thank you very much. Thank you. So with that, Ms. Rios, we will open up our morning public speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're going to begin your speakers with Gary Steward, Joy Strickland, Joseph Lashley, and Charles Goodman. Your first speaker is Gary Steward. Of course, we've got the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred for further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You will state your name and address for the record and address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Gary Steward. My address is 6344 Goliad Avenue, Dallas, Texas, 75214. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council. I am on the board of Downwinders at Risk. I'm also active, one of the environmental chairs of the Dallas Council of MoveOn.org, and I'm here representing those groups, but I'm also representing over 10,000 citizens who have sent letters to you, Mayor, and to you, Council, urging, even demanding, that this City Council adopt the strongest regulations concerning fracking within the city limits of Dallas. I myself spent a month canvassing, going door to door, even to residents in University Park. People there who are not environmentalists, most of the people who have sent these letters to you are non-environmentalists. They're average citizens who are concerned that their safety, the well-being of their families and children are being sacrificed for profit of a gas company or gas companies. Another thing that has not been responded to is the demand by thousands of citizens to have public hearings in the evening. We heard someone say in City Hall that, oh, there already are public hearings in the middle of the day. Just to remind you gently that most people cannot come to City Hall during the day. Most people have to work. It is your responsibility as servants of the citizens of Dallas to make it possible that the voices of the people are heard on this critical issue, and that there be series of public hearings in the different districts, particularly those that will be most affected by the fracking, to hear from them. You are, after all, their servants. We have heard that basically the drift that is happening in the council is that you will give what the gas company wants, either out of desire for profit or fear of a lawsuit. My advice to you, in all due respect, is that you stand up for us and not let the city of Dallas be held hostage by a gas company or gas companies that a prior mayor and a prior council did a wrong act and making a deal that the public had no involvement in. We do not want our well-being, our health, and the future of our children and our city to be sacrificed for someone else's profit. And in closing, I just want to say, if you think that the citizens will stand by and let this happen, you're very mistaken. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Mayor?
I'm sorry, Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. Do we have any plans to have any evening hearings on this matter?
We have talked about it before at the, and we said we would wait to see how we were going to proceed until we took the votes.
Before we take a final
we
vote?
We said that we would address that question at that time, not whether we were going to do it or not. We were going to address it at that time.
Address the question of having some public hearings in the evening.
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure we have that on our agenda to consider.
Yes, Ms.
I want to make very clear that I have not made a deal with anyone when it comes to this particular topic. So I just want to put that out there. It's all been in conversation. Those are the meetings that I've been in. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you. Next speaker.
Your next speaker is Joy Strickland. Ms. Strickland will be followed by Joseph Lashley.
My name is Joy Strickland. I reside at 2615 South Boulevard. And thank you, Mayor and City Council, for this opportunity. My organization is Mothers Against Teen Violence. I'm the founder and CEO. Our mission is public information, education, and advocacy for drug policy reform. And I'm here to speak this morning about misdemeanor marijuana arrests in the city of Dallas. In 2007, the Texas legislature passed a law allowing for ticketing rather than arresting individuals found to be in possession of small amounts of marijuana. That same year, there were 4,400 such arrests in Dallas County. When it comes to drug-related offenses, we believe it's important to make a distinction between those behaviors that we may not like or that offend our sensibilities and those behaviors that actually impact public safety. I've never used an illegal substance, nor does my organization advocate illegal drug use. But clearly, those individuals found to be in possession of small amounts of marijuana are not a threat to public safety, as they are typically released within hours of their arrest. So what could it mean to the city of Dallas if we ended misdemeanor marijuana arrests? Well, first of all, it would allow us to focus on violent crime. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, in 2010, the Dallas Police Department had a clearance rate of 66% for murder, 57% for rape, 18% for robbery, and it continues downhill from there. We believe greater resources for violent crime would actually improve public safety. And secondly, just for the sake of example, if we assume that 80% of those 4,400 Dallas County arrests occurred in the city of Dallas, and if we also assume that a single arrest cost the citizens of Dallas $1,000, whereas nationally the range is estimated to be between $1,500 and $2,000, then it's conceivable that in a one-year period the city could save $3.5 million, and over 4 years that would be $14 million. But since marijuana arrests have increased 43% from 2007 to 2010 statewide, it's likely that our savings could be much greater. Of course, this does not take into account the human costs of these arrests. So I urge the city to consider the benefits of ticketing rather than arresting individuals found to be in possession of small amounts of marijuana, because this is not only legal now, but it is also an opportunity to be smart on crime. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Davis?
Joyce, I want to thank you for coming and to bring that to awareness. Yeah, I just want to talk a little about piggyback on what Ms. Strickland is saying. She is in the District 7, and I appreciate her for all the work that she is doing with Mothers Against Teen Violence. And I guess we really need to talk about this for help and public safety. Ms. Medrano, there are individuals who have been off probation, for example. Once they are off probation, they are able to now vote. But they do not know that they can get perhaps their record expunged. And they have been walking as citizens in this city for 15 to 20 years where they have been off probation and not knowing that they have the right to vote and that they have the right to expunge their record. And this felony is on them. So they've been walking around in this city for almost 15 to 20 years just not knowing what they can do. And so I think this is something, Ms. Medrano, that we need to really talk about to help our citizens understand, especially males, that once they are off probation, they can vote. And if they can vote, then they can sponge the record. That'll help a lot when it comes to, I think, ex-offenders getting a second chance in life. It makes no sense that we live in a city, Mr. Mayor, that these individuals walk and have been in this just not knowing, just with the F on their back, when something could have been done about it. So I want to thank you, Joyce, for bringing that out, because we're talking about some things that I think education is one of them that I think we can do to educate our communities. I think prevention is one thing that we can do to help. And also, I think if we're giving these groups who are working with ex-offenders, I think that something has to be, they need to do some other things to ensure that these individuals know their rights after they're off probation. So I appreciate you for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. And Ms. Strickland, thank you. I want to ask just a couple of things, and Ms. Davis, I got something I want to say in relation to the educational piece. Are we saying, Ms. Strickland, are you saying that we should not give them a ticket for the possession of small amounts of marijuana? I'm just trying to get clarity so I can know.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we should not arrest them.
Okay.
We can ticket them.
Okay.
But the legislature made provisions in 2007 that we could simply ticket them and not arrest them.
Okay. So
for misdemeanor marijuana arrest.
Okay. So if they get caught with a blunt, for example, then you're saying write them a ticket, don't handcuff them and take them for possession, but just write the ticket and then move forward from there.
Right, because arresting people, we should only arrest people that pose a threat to public safety.
Okay.
And clearly, if we arrest them, they are released if they can post, if there is bail, we can release them right away. So obviously, they're not a threat to public safety. So we're squandering a finite resource.
And what's your measurement for a small amount?
Well, if that's in the law, that's in the statute itself in the city, I would urge you to take a look at that. I think it's less than an ounce.
Okay, so
you should follow the law as it's written.
Okay,
I believe
the only reason I'm saying that, and I guess we'll take this up, Ms. Medrano, at some point, in public safety would be a better form. But when I know that the law is less than that ounce, but if a person has two or three blunts, how does that equate? And then the officer on the street, here's a guy with four blunts, here's a guy with one blunt, here's a guy with seven blunts. The problem I'm having with the measurement on the street at the officer that has to make that decision at that particular time is where I have a...
Well, and I certainly appreciate that, council member. But, when you think about drug trafficking, this is a problem of supply and demand, and
right.
It's driven by markets.
Right.
So if we want to reduce the supply of drugs or reduce the demand for drugs, I mean, that's the only way we're going to win the so-called war on drugs. And arresting users,
right,
that has no sustainable impact. I mean, we've been doing that now for 41 years.
Right.
Has no sustainable impact on the supply of drugs, no sustainable impact on the demand for drugs, despite spending billions, tens of billions of dollars every year nationally and millions locally.
Because it goes back to something that I've been saying, and Miriam will wrap this up. It goes back to something I've been saying about good people and bad people, because I've been saying we need a city jail. And the city jail much different from Luce Terry, for example. I'm zero tolerance when it comes to drugs, period. Be it a joint or 10,000 pounds. That's number one with me. But I think that if you, for example, were arrested, I could not see George Strickland. It's very difficult for me to see you be taken to Luce Terry because you forgot to pay a traffic ticket, for example. And I think that there should also be another facility to where that could be dealt with in a less criminal manner. And the same goes with what you're saying with the less than an ounce of marijuana. I support it. I want you to know that. So I'm going to push the effort, but I'm going to suggest we go to public safety, and that you continue the crusade, and you'll have some voices behind you with that crusade. Ms. Davis, I think that, and Mayor and Mary, I think that we should make use of our television station that we already have, and we should do a show, What You Need to Know. And it doesn't have to be just, and that's just a title I just gave it, but it could be all types of things. It could be water bills, things or awareness, and that would begin to cover our educational piece that our citizens need to know. We could take advantage of that on our own communication television station, and just the title show of What You Need to Know. Well, today you need to know about the stray dogs. Today you need to know about the water department or different things like that. I think that's a step forward in educating. So with that, thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time. Next speaker.
Your next speaker is Joseph Lashley.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Honorable City Council, Honorable Pro Tem Mayor, Honorable Mayor Mike Rollins, it's a pleasure to be here. My first meeting since you took office. I want to congratulate you on your success. Usually when I come to City Hall, it's pretty urgent about a lot of stuff in my neighborhood. Number one, what's going on in my neighborhood? Too many dogs is running around in the neighborhood. Lots of them are pit bulls. Several times I walk in the morning because I'm retired and I don't work. I have to carry a can of mace with me because there's several dogs in the neighborhood. I've called the rapid phone number a couple of times. They have picked up probably one, but there's still a bunch of dogs in the neighborhood, including they're running around also at the transit center. My other concern is dumping in the aisles. In the alleys where we have emergency vehicles can go through, there's dumping all kinds of stuff up in those alleys. If an emergency vehicle or the gas company has to go to the back of the alley, like I had a gas problem, the gas company, I called them, they had to come back. They couldn't go up my alley because there's all kinds of stuff to the back of my alley. My third concern, the school zones. It's jammed in the morning. People going through the school zone, they're on the phone, they're in the texting. I stopped one officer and told him about it. He was out there probably about 15 minutes. I didn't see anything done. My third concern, not an issue, but the drugs. I never smoked no drugs. and it's getting out of control in our city. They, even in a train, you can smell it. I don't feel good riding public vehicles or trains when I have to sit down and smell that kind of stuff. I don't like it. So I brought these issues so we can try to look into the issue to try to clean our city because we have a good city. I'm pleased to see all these nice buildings, nice highways, but we need to clean up our city with some of the mess. I go to some of the meeting at the transit center, and I spoke with Captain Golden. He took care of a lot of issues. So now I'm coming to City Hall to talk about certain issues. Our city is a great city. Thank you.
Thank you. What neighborhood do you live in?
Pleasant Grove.
Excuse me, Pleasant Grove?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Joey Zapata is here, and he'll come speak to you. You had some code questions.
Okay.
Thank you for coming down. This is what we need. Make sure you you voice this up. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker?
Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, your final speaker, Charles Goodrum, did cancel. That way that concludes your morning speakers.
Thank
we
you.
Move now to approval of minutes of the September 10, 2012 budget workshop and the September 19, 2012 City Council meeting.
Motion is second. Any edits, discussions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. You have for individual appointment to the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission, Woodrow W. Austin is nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Jessica Sepulveda is nominated by Councilmember Alonzo. To the Cultural Affairs Commission, Catherine Cuellar is nominated by Mayor Rawlings to fill the interested citizen category. For full council appointment to the Civil Service Board, Jeff Bryan is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. And to the Housing Finance Corporation Board, Trent Hughes is nominated by Councilmember Grayson. Those are your nominees this morning.
You have a motion. Second. Second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
That concludes your action items, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We'll take item briefing A on the calendar.
Good morning. We wanted to speak with you a few minutes this morning about the 2012 and 2013 city calendars. There are a couple of changes to the November calendar for this year.
You know what? Excuse me. I want to interrupt one thing because I was going to do this earlier. For those of you that are the post-meeting, end-of-meeting speakers, we will be taking that before we go into executive session after these briefings. So if anybody's hearing that and wants to know that, I want this morning. And it'll probably be this morning, so thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
On slide three, you'll see a couple of changes to your November 2012 calendar. We need to move a meeting that was scheduled for Monday, November 12th. We need to move that to the 14th, which is a Wednesday. This will be so that there's the observation of the citywide Veterans Day Parade and also the necessity for some time requirements to canvass the election. So that change will be for November 12th, moving to November 14th. And also on November 26th, we'll be canceling a city council meeting that week. On the next slide begins the 2013 calendar, and you'll see your city council meetings. Of course, those are the first and third Wednesdays are the briefing meetings. The second and fourth Wednesdays are your agenda meetings, and the fifth Wednesdays are canceled with no meetings. Exceptions to this are listed on the next two slides. On slide five and six, you'll see any adjustments, whether it's to cancel for holidays or needing to adjourn early, spring recess, July recess, and so forth. You'll see those changes. Those exceptions are listed on page five and six. On slide seven, beginning your committee meetings that meet typically on the first and third Mondays of each month, economic development, housing, budget finance audit, and arts, cultural libraries, those four committees. You'll see on slide eight some of the exceptions with those. Of course, the detail is listed in the appendix on the actual calendar. On slides 9 and 10, you'll see your other four committees that meet on the second and fourth Mondays, those being quality of life, public safety, transportation environment, and the Trinity River Corridor Project. And on slide 10 are some of the exceptions of those meetings. On slide 11, we include on your city calendar the budget process. Although we've just started our fiscal year 12-13, we're already planning for our fiscal year 14 with budget workshops beginning in February of 2013 going through September the 18th when the budget will be adopted. And then last, on slide 12, you'll see the 9 city holidays that the city recognizes. Those are listed on slide 12. Next steps would be for us to have an item for your consideration next week on October the 10th when we would vote to amend the 2012 calendar and adopt the 2013 calendar. And the appendix includes both of those calendars. If there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Yes, Ms.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The one correction that we need to make is the quality of life. It goes from 9:30 to 11, and I think you have 9:30 to 10:30.
Yes, ma'am. On slide 9, we did have 9:30 to 10:30.
And on the next one as well, you have it on 2 points. Thank you.
Make that correction.
Thank you. Mr. Cadet?
Mayor, on changing from November 12th to the 14th council meeting, it was on a Monday, correct? And you're changing it to a Wednesday. Well, that's when TML is.
Well, it does, but it's here and
in Grand Prairie.
And rather than have two meetings that week, because we had to have a canvassing meeting for the election. If we'd had a meeting on Monday, we'd still have to have another canvassing meeting. Uh-huh. So we moved it to the Wednesday, so you only have one. Because we're going to have to do the canvassing. The time frame made the canvassing on that Wednesday.
So we need to make sure we got a forum here.
Yeah,
on Wednesday.
We will.
Okay.
And we'll try to look at what we're putting on there.
Okay, thank you.
Is that a briefing day?
I don't look and see, Jack.
The 14th.
It's an action day.
It was an action
day.
So you'll probably have everybody here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Yes, Ms. Grayson. Did you say? I'm sorry. Excuse me, Ms. Grayson. I didn't look down. Ms. Alonso.
I wanted to ask about the...
They always blame me that I don't look. I always look to the left. I was just doing the right thing. So.
I have the same issue that Councilmember Hunt said regarding the quality of life. But is it 9:30 or Lovers still, or are we changing from 9 to 10:30? It's 9:30 still.
Ms. David.
Yes, I'm looking here at the November calendar attachment. I know that we're having the November 6th bond election. Is that the day we're having the bond election?
Yes, ma'am.
So is it not on the calendar? On the attachment?
No, it's not on
that. Well, let me ask a question. Vera, when will we be briefed on the bond again?
Well, it won't be. It's set on the ballot and ready to go.
Well, the only reason I'm asking, I'm having some calls in District 7. People want to know who will be the person working in our community to work the bond, to help get the message out about the bond election.
I was under the impression that you nominated a person for that committee and that committee is set.
Well, we was not briefed on it. I mean, someone just called and said, you know, you need to get this person, select a person, and I selected a person. So at this point...
So that's the person that should be in the
committee.
Who
is the person handling the whole bond package?
Alan Wong is the chair of the committee. Okay.
Now, who's getting paid to do the job?
Alan is a volunteer.
Okay.
You mean... Your person is on a... The Reeds have been hired by the committee,
okay?
And your person should be the individual, because that's what I ask. Make sure you nominate somebody that will go back in the community and talk to people and answer questions.
So what is the Reeds' responsibility, Mr. Mayor?
to develop the marketing communication.
And we're paying them how much to do that?
We are not paying them anything.
Okay, so
they're there's a finance chair of that committee. They're raising money
and so the market, see, Mr. Mayor, I think what needs to happen, I think we need to all just, you know, really sit down and talk about this, because my one person that I selected, and we're talking about paying the Reeves company, then what is their responsibility on ensuring that this stuff get out in the community? Now, my one person, we've got over 80,000 people. That one person got to go out and talk to 80,000 people about this bond package. I think this was just handled wrong. I don't think we was briefed on it right. I thought we needed to, you know, at least have some type of input. Now this person supposed to go and try to make this happen. And so,
well, let me suggest, Ms. Davis, that I'm going to have Alan call you and answer any questions, because this is a citizen committee. They raise their own money. The city has nothing to do with this.
No, I'm talking about, you're talking about the Reeves company. I have nothing against the Reeves company.
I mean,
we're paying them, and we're paying them just to do the
marketing.
Well,
we are not paying them.
Well, let me say this. Somebody's raising the money.
Correct.
I'm not raising the money.
Correct.
Okay. They're supposed to go out in the community. The Reed needs to at least come back and brief us on what they plan to do. Now, they're going to do what? They get a certain amount of money to do A, B, C, and D. That's what we need to be told. And no one has told me about it. Council members might know about it. So they need to come and brief us on what they plan to do.
Let me have Mr. Wall call
you. No, we need to have the Reed company, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I'm not sure that is the legal.
What's illegal about it?
This is a citizen group advocating for this, not City Hall.
Then why did they pay then?
The citizens decided to hire them.
Mine didn't.
Excuse me?
No, we don't want to get into that. He didn't decide to hire them. He just got in the game.
I can't speak to that process.
Okay, well, I think at this point, we just need to be briefed on what's the responsibility of the Reeves company when you're talking about marketing. That's all I'm saying.
I want some advice from counsel here, because my understanding is that's not our job.
Okay, come on. Then help me educate me. I need to be educated.
Here's the question you need to speak to, Ms. Perkins. What authority and use of the city council's time is appropriate in dealing with outside resources advocating on a political election?
And they're getting paid, and they're going to raise the money.
And, Mayor, there are limitations on what the city can do to use the city resources to advocate for the election.
Okay.
My understanding is this is a private entity or non-city entity that is responsible for generating a campaign to support the election. It is not a city.
So we don't see the material that goes out. Okay, Tom, go on and sit down, honey. Y'all, okay, let's just drop the conversation, because it's going to be what it's going to be. Okay, let's move on to the next agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Oh, no, excuse me, Mr. Allen. There was some other questions. Mrs. Grayson was next.
Yeah. I just want to say, Ms. Davis, they're going to send out a postcard, and they're going to, for each district, specialize to each district, and you're going to get the final say-so on the wording on that postcard.
Well, but you're talking about one person supposed to do a whole district?
No.
Well, let's just move on, because we might not vote in South Dallas, so it might not win anyway.
I just wanted some clarification on our November meetings. We are going to have a briefing meeting on the 7th. We're going to have an agenda meeting on the 14th. We're going to have the canvassing results and an agenda meeting, right? And that's it for November.
That's it.
Okay. That's what I wanted. And then also, I wanted to ask Ms. Film, is there some particular reason why we do all the budget things on a Monday?
You're not doing it this coming year. You're doing it on Tuesdays most of the time.
Why can't we do it on Wednesdays as though it was a regular briefing item? Why do we do those on separate days?
Well, this year, you had less because, you know, you had adequate money, and you didn't have less money, and you didn't have more money, but you really need that time. Now, I will be glad to cancel those if we don't have it and you want to, but I really would like to reserve the time, because if it's a budget that's more challenging than this one was this year, because you kind of had just the right amount of money, I'd like to hold that time.
Instead of having regular briefings, you know, on other topics,
no, I understand that
why not just devote those Wednesday afternoons or mornings when we'd ordinarily do normal briefings to budget briefings?
Well, because you really need both those times. I mean, I'll cancel them if I can, but you're doing a full load of business on your Wednesdays, most Wednesdays. Now, this month is going to be a little slow, but this far out saying combine them, I could keep in mind that you'd like to do that, and then we'll try to do that. I just hate not to have those held in case we need them.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, my suggestion would be that if there are generalized briefings that could be pushed,
okay,
then let's not have a separate day for budget briefing and then come in on a Wednesday and have a briefing that could be pushed to October, possibly.
Okay. Ms. Grayson, I'm aligned with that, and we will work with Ms. Zoom in this next fall as to make sure we minimize those days and put them on briefing days if possible.
Yeah.
Okay, while you're discussing that, I have one other thing I can bring up along those lines. October the 17th, is that the right, that's the briefing day I'm talking about?
This month.
This month is a very light briefing schedule. And there's had some conversation about not having it. I hate to, without asking all of you if you would like to have that day off, but that day is very light on briefing.
Well, actually, I was thinking about that today. Today is very light,
yes,
on briefings. And, you know, just anything. I mean, I could be working in the district. There's 100 other things,
okay,
I could be doing.
Well, then if all of you are okay, we'll put October 7th, take
not
October 7th.
Not to say this stuff today is unimportant, just that it might have been able to be combined with some other briefings, like on the 17th, and we could have one instead of.
Okay, well, if we do away with the 17th today, you can do this stuff today and have the 17th off if all of you are agreeable to that. So just let me
just
know.
Just something to think about.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, you would, because it was on a calendar, so I think you're going to have to at least give me an indication.
All right. Let me get this back under control here, and let's hold that. I mean, there's several issues bouncing around here, and so I'm going to come back to that. Right, no, it wasn't a comment. It was no. I just want to make sure we don't forget and we take action on the different things. Let's let's go around the speakers, and we'll come back to that, Mr. Allen.
I've reconsidered my comments, and I'm okay.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. In reference back to the bond program, just in short, tomorrow night at Cedar Crest, at the Cedar Crest Homeowners Association meeting, Charles O'Neill, in which is with the bond promotional team, let me just say it that way, and my appointee, Philip Gibson, they will be, and myself, will be presenting to the community as a part of the bond, and I guess what you just kind of go back to is our individual appointees, and then within our communities, the homeowners associations and the meetings just as at National Night Out last night, both Charles O'Neill and Philip Gibson were there, and they were passing out material, you know, as related to bond, in which I'm supportive of. So, but I understand what Ms. Grayson was saying, that they're going to do some individual postcards that we will have a say in, that will go, and we will have our pictures on them, I'm sure, and we'll be able to say the different things that we would like to have an opinion as to what we want to see on those flyers. I do hear Ms. Davis as well and her concerns, and Mayor, I think an additional briefing to kind of merge that together is warranted, so it can be an understanding,
mm-hmm,
and then we'll have that under control. But you know, I'm gung ho for this thing, and I think that they are out there doing it individually, And I'll just encourage all of the homeowner associations to invite the bond presentation to those meetings and other meetings, and so that we can educate, you know, the folks in the community.
Okay. Thank you. Any other, Mr. Davis?
And I guess what all I'm saying with bond passes, Lord knows the stuff I have in mind, I need to make sure it happens. So let me say that. It just needs some understanding on how this process is going to work. Now, with my individual that I appointed to the committee, I think someone just needs to come and tell us. If it's the chair that you have appointed, just needs to come and tell us this is what we expect to do, A, B, C,
and D. Let me explain. You will get that briefing.
Okay.
I am being passive aggressive on you about having a briefing. I'm sure you individually need to be briefed.
Okay.
I'm hesitant about doing that as a city council, because that assumes that each of us as a city council are aligned in the same manner. This
okay.
is a political event,
okay.
and this body should not be used for briefing on political stuff. You need to know what's going on, though, and we need to make sure you get that
Absolutely.
Information, and we will
okay.
get that for you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, now let's come back to Ms. Grayson's idea. So the idea, Ms. Zoom, is to cancel on the 17th. Is that what? Hold on here. Is that what is discussion November October 17th?
That was Mary's suggestion.
Yes, the only reason I suggested it is we haven't got anything particularly ready or needed that day, and so if we need to, I was going to ask you if you would want that day off and
mm-hmm.
going to okay.
Okay. All right. So is that a? Well, I need a motion from you, Ms. Grayson, since you're passing.
Don't move.
Okay,
yeah,
Ms. Grayson.
Okay.
All right. Any discussion? On that.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried, so that meeting is canceled.
Okay.
One other thing, too, I was going to say, Ms. Soon came to me and told me she would not be ready today on the amount for parking at Clyde Warren Park. And I think because there's some other issues that have come up, and you're going to have that the 1st of November,
yeah.
right? So that was the one thing we, I should have said at the beginning. Okay, now we need a motion to approve this calendar.
That'll be on your agenda next week.
Oh, that'll be in the, okay, we'll vote on it then. Okay, good.
No,
that's next week.
No,
next week, I just told. Okay, let's, Dr. Pepe.
So just briefly, I'll just wait till you finish there.
Pepe, we're ready.
Okay, sure. Hey, so bottom line is we're going to learn CPR today, and I just had a few comments up front before we do that. For some of you here have taken the classes with us before, some have not, so you'll get to see what it's like and how effective and easy it is to learn. Not to bury the headline, there are still too many people in this community who die each day unnecessarily because their loved ones stand by helplessly not knowing how to do CPR. As you'll see here today, for those who have not taken it, it's like one of the easiest things to learn. It's going to be simple. It's going to take just a few minutes. Probably my comments will take longer than the time it will take to learn how to save a life here. But that's having said that, it's not because the city of Dallas hasn't done a superlative job in terms of attacking this problem. The two greatest killers, what are the two greatest killers of people in our community? One is a heart attack, where people have heart muscle damage and their heart may not work or stop beating, or outright cardiac arrest, where their heart completely stops beating and the person's not breathing and so on. That's what we're going to learn about today. What I want to do is, first of all, point out that one of the problems that we have is that we have done a terrific job in several areas. One is, thanks to Ms. Thune, right after she came into office, she made a terrific, let's say, commitment and got some grants so that we could actually train all of our 13,000 city employees, which we got done, and we continue to train new people as they come in. So that was a terrific thing. We trained people here at the city council as a great example, and a couple of the people, one not being here today, Ms. Coop and Ms. Drano, basically saved a life within 6 months of taking the training with us here. So we want to thank you for doing such a great thing. Okay.
It worked, Dr. Pickering.
Yeah, okay. And I remember what Ms. Coop said, she remembered what I had said, which is just do it. And you all did a terrific job in saving those lives. So that's the reinforcement why we're here today. A couple other things you should know about is that thanks to the fire department, we also went down and looked what we were doing in the dispatch office. We were able to identify cardiac arrest centers that now becomes international standards of the research we're doing down there. Thanks to people such as Ryan Evans and Assume and council member Caraway and Medrano helped write letters so that we were able to get huge funding from the National Institutes of Health, and we've become a poster child for them. Thanks to those efforts, by the way, we've been able to monitor with equipment we got, monitor cardiac arrest cases, and able to see how well firefighters are actually doing the CPR and how often they're interrupting and giving them feedback. And we were hoping to improve survival chances in this community by 20%. What happened actually is we increased it by 150%. It went up 2.5-fold over the last few years. It's been unbelievable. Thanks to the firefighters and the great training. One person I want to say you'll see here today is Dr. Ronna Miller, who actually went out to every one of those stations over the years and continued to give them the feedback. And she's our CPR czarina, as I say, of Dallas, and she's done a fabulous job for us. So we want to congratulate her for the work she did. The other thing that you should know about is that in the area of heart attack, or people get heart muscle damage, thanks to some of the work that Chief Kaye was here, right, and some of her people, they have started what they call an ST elevation, in other words, really bad heart attack attack program, and they literally decreased the death rate by one half. They literally brought the heart attack death rate, and beyond that, that little peak. Is a lot of people who basically would have had permanent heart muscle damage then are now actually able to go home and be normal instead of being constantly going back to the hospital with congestive heart failure. So a lot of terrific things have happened here, and it's been incredible. In fact, just this month in the Journal of Emergency Medical Services, we have just published our data, what we call the sweet spot. We actually were able to identify through our data that we get through the National Institutes of Health and the feedback, is that there has to be a certain rate you should be hitting at. When you do the CPR, it should be between 100 and 120 compressions per minute, or else survival chances go down. You have to hit that sweet spot. One of the things we did is something very simple here, by the way, for the firefighters, because when you're anxious and your adrenaline is pumping, you might go too fast. And we found just by having a little simple metronome, which you have one on you right there, Ronna? Yeah. So that's what you use, and they can have it, and they know exactly what to do. Now, if you don't happen to have a metronome on you, by the way, just remember to go row, row, row your boat, because if you do that, we find that that works really well as well. So that's it. So let's at this point, Tom, I wanted to sort of go ahead and get on with the program and just sort of show you how simple it is. The majority of people who have sudden death, is it okay if I go away from the microphone for a second?
Please.
Yeah.
So the majority of people who have sudden death in our community will have actually not bad heart muscle damage, where they actually have a simple electrical circuit in the heart's electrical system. A little tributary along the coronary arteries, instead of being completely plugged off, a little tributary is basically affected, and it affects the electrical system through the heart. Instead of beating a nice rhythm like this, it will completely just go randomly like this, so it's no longer pumping. But the way you can cure that, and it's really highly effective, is that you have to deliver an electrical shock, especially electrical shock with the airway. People have seen this before. Where these are called AEDs, automatic external defibrillator. I did a study about 15 years ago at the airport in Chicago. We put them in the wall, and what's interesting about that was they had no survivors in the airport, for example, where millions of people go through a year. no survivors, and the first year we put these in, they had a dozen people who went down. And so how many of those people do you think survived after we looked at all the major rivers on the wall? That's right. Three of them were out in the international areas we've been at, but the nine people were in the areas where we had pitching coverage and all that. Let me bias your responses, because in those situations, the people, six of the nine cases, the people had never seen an AED before. They just heard about it and they never got it. Okay, so now what do you think now?
Six.
The answer is all nine. Okay. They are so easy to use, and it was a 100% survival rate after the city decades and not survival. Does anybody know where these automated percolators are here in the, where are they?
Red elevators.
Yeah, red elevators. So run, red and red. They know that kind of thing. Exactly, right? And so that's exactly where you should be looking for. I think down on the first level, they may be at the security desk, but that's right, exactly around the red elevator. So that's good to know, because that's the number one thing, is someone's got to get it. And by the way, you should, when you have someone that goes down, make sure you say, does anybody know where the defibrillator is?
Okay,
go,
yep, floor.
Take that. Yep. Yep.
Every floor,
right here. Yep. I just took a picture one out there just now. So that's important. You need to know where it is. It's nice to have them, but if you don't know how to get them or where to get them, so you should find someone that's you. Do you know where the AED is? Yes, right over. Go get it. And then you should go fetch it and bring it here. Now, not everybody will require a shock, but the majority of people who will survive will need one, so you need to know how to do it, and it's really easy to do. Brother, do you want to come out and help us with this one real quickly? Okay, has anybody ever used an AED before? Who has not used an AED before? Anybody? Okay. Do you want to come up? Jesse, I'll just pick on you just because you were just right in front of me, so that'd be great. And you know, actually, if you like to come up as well, that's where we're going, it's fine as well. We have a couple different versions. So that's the first thing. Let me tell you how to operate the AED, okay? It's easy. It's basically all you do is go get it, turn it on, and follow the instructions. That's all it is for that, okay? So go get it, turn it on, and follow the instructions.
Men don't follow instructions real well.
Oh, my goodness. So remember I said, the first thing I said, go get it, turn it on, right, and follow the instructions. Okay, there you go. Turn it on.
Remove clothes from patient's chest.
Okay, don't actually do this.
Remove white pads from gray plastic case.
All right, we're doing good.
Attach pads to bare skin.
This over here is
exactly as shown. Stay clear of patient. Analyzing heart rhythm. Stay clear of patient. Analyzing heart rhythm. Shock his eyes. Stay clear of patient.
Alright.
Shock to the
place it where?
Well, I'll show you. If we're like where you want to do it, like under the collarbone on this side, because it's going to go across the heart and under the armpit.
No, I know, but the instructions said.
There are pictures on the device, on the tab, and on the screen.
I couldn't see that.
Let me make it easy for you. It's so easy. This is the hard part about AEDs. You put one right underneath the collarbone here on this side, because it's going to cross the heart, and you go under the armpit, and now hand rest right about here. Like, for example, a male would be the nipple one, they're right off that, and you may do that for a deal. Okay? Hard part is somewhere in place, and I just told you how to do that. So, what do you do for AED?
Go get it.
Go get it. Turn it on. And follow the instructions. Okay, let's have one version. Let me show you, and let's show you another version right over here. This is the one that you'll see actually here. We have our hallway. Okay.
remote control. The real ones do not have a remote control. So on day to day, when you're actually using the device, don't waste time looking for this because it won't be there.
Got one. Call to help now. How do we do it? So we need to go to the church. Look at pictures on pads. Peel one pad off blue plastic. Apply pad to bare skin exactly as shown in the picture. Press pad firmly. Peel other pad off blue plastic. Apply pad to bare skin exactly as shown in the picture. But do not touch patient. Evaluating heart rhythm. Stand by. Preparing to shock. Everyone clear. Press flashing button. Shock delivered. Provide chest compression.
All right, so we'll go ahead and stop that. Now, in the meantime,
while he's putting this hat on, someone should be doing CPR during that shift time while those are going on. They should be doing CPR while those pads are applied on that. Okay, so how do you
start about pressing AED? Go get it. Turn it on. Follow the instructions. Does everybody know how to do this now? It's really no brainer and it's life saving. Now, it may advise no shock advised and just continue CPR. The main thing you need to know is that this is, thank you very much. By the way, thank you for saving a life. Really appreciate your everything. Yes. We're keeping up with the old record here. So, all right. What we're going to do now is go ahead and practice the compressions. What we've learned over the years is when a person has a sudden death, the people who are more likely to survive, all they really need is very good compressions. You don't even need to breathe for them. If it's a sudden collapse, like a sudden, because their heart was beating fine, you were oxygenated, and the oxygenation probably doesn't go away for about 3 or 4 minutes. By that time, hopefully, professional rescue is going to go. I will give you one advice. You will be here in a second. When they say, call for help, you know, they'll say, call 911. I would not say, call for who is going to call 911, and everybody will go, or nobody will go. You would say, you, call 911 and tell them we're fixing to do CPR. I want to do this. Right? Or do you know, anybody know where the AEDs are? You know where the AEDs are? Go get it. Go get the AED. So that's the kind of thing that you go get the AED. Or if you have to, call 911 and get one coming, etc. But usually point out to someone and make sure it's an assigned task. We know who's doing it, etc. Often the dispatcher is going to ask you questions like, well, where's the person? Are they breathing? If you just say, we're fixing to do CPR, if it's really that kind of case, then that will help us get past all that stuff very quickly. So, at this point, I think we'll go ahead and open the tips, if you don't mind, all right? There's some tips right in front of you. What's really cool about this is we actually did the research here as well on these kits. We, a few years ago, found out that you could teach CPR for 3 or 4 hours of course, and then people would say, go ahead and open your boxes and go after the exit here. A little rubber thing outside of the plastic bag. Go ahead and pull it out. And what we found was that by making things available, told you. That's the stuff that's part. What's amazing is these kits, now you could take them home. They'll have a deep family train. Everybody there. We've done it in several of the mayors area in the last few months. They come back and they trained all their family. It's very cool. All right,
so what we need to do is
pull these guys up. Okay? So, we have the help here today of, and I hope you know, our new assistant chief for the
also Chief Tammy Kennedy, who I've introduced before, and also Chief George Chavez, who just came in, or the deputy who just came in, so it's really important to have you on board to be helpful. Make sure you blow these up really tight, and blow them up real hard and make sure you're tight, okay? As you do. And go back on the menu, just one thing that I want to show them from the
paramedics I've showed up several times. We get the
go back to the beginning of the first ending. I think you're starting this up. So if you look inside your kit, you'll say inside your kit you'll see DVD, that's what you're applying. You see here, when you stick it in, it says English, French, Espanol. So you have the ability to do both of those here, and there are other, actually other kits that are a lot of other different languages as well if you want to see. The American Heart Association developed it in conjunction with the Neural Corporation. And we were able to actually, we are one of the tests here and show that these are actually even more effective than the paired CPR course if you're teaching an average person to play it yourself, okay? So let's go ahead and go to English here in this case, and let's go ahead and play the bird, adult, and only CPR. And now I'll look at my wife.
As a paramedic, I've showed up several times. We get the call, 911, you have a response to a cardiac emergency or cardiac arrest. And everyone is just standing around, whether it's coworkers or whether it's loved ones. They could have been doing CPR prior to our arrival. And it's unfortunate because if we are able to have people doing CPR, it could possibly save that person's life.
And when I had walked up to the bus stop, there was just this crowd just covering the entire sidewalk, and they were all just standing around this man on the ground who was turning purple, and nobody was doing anything. It was kind of frustrating because there was a ton of adults, like 30 adults standing around this man, and it took me, a teenager, to step over there and say that something needed to be done. Just because of the CPR training that I had received in high school, I knew what to do in a situation like that. I knew the signs of when somebody needs CPR. So my training kicked in, and it was kind of like being back in the classroom responding to it. I told somebody to call 911, and I performed the CPR until the EMTs and the police department and the fire department came.
Everyone should know CPR because everyone has a heartbeat, and you never know when an emergency is going to happen, when someone may go into cardiac arrest. If you don't do CPR, then the person doesn't survive.
I didn't have any response from him, and when the EMTs arrived, they didn't get any response from him until they got into the hospital, and when he was in the hospital, he was stabilized. When they told me that I had saved his life, I kind of started crying, but it was more like a relief tears that I had actually helped somebody instead of letting them die on the street.
Anytime a friend or loved one is hurt, our first instinct is to help. Hi, my name is Lydia Mackey, and in the next few minutes, I'm going to show you hands-only CPR, including how to know if someone needs CPR. I'll show you everything you need to know to help an adult who needs CPR. It's simple. Call 911 and then push hard and fast in the center of the chest. That's it. If you have a remote control for your video player, keep it near you so you can easily pause to practice or replay anything you want to see again. Before we get started, it's important for you to know that the number one reason people don't give CPR to someone who needs it is that they're afraid of doing CPR wrong. Any CPR is better than no CPR. Your actions can only help. We're going to teach you effective hands-only CPR, and you'll get many chances to practice. You'll learn how to push hard and push fast, so the blood keeps moving until medical professionals take over. As part of your training kit, you received a mini AM like this. She'll help you get a feel for how hard and fast to push, but you'll have to get her ready first. Let me show you how. Find the tube of your mini AM and blow it up like this.
Okay, so they happen where people collapse, they're on the floor. So that's what we're going to do today.
He's not the only one.
Okay. I got a microphone that works now, so we're in good shape. All right, so let's go ahead and play the next version.
Now Minnie Ann is ready. Place Minnie Ann in front of you like this. Her chest should be at your knees with her head to one side. Before we begin, let me show you something that will help you know how hard to push. Minnie Ann has a built-in clicker. When you press down deep enough, you'll hear a click. Okay, let's get started learning how to help an adult who needs CPR. Watch as I show you how. Position yourself next to the person with his or her chest in front of you. Place the heel of your hand in the center of the chest. Now put the other hand on top, like this. Now you try it. Put the heel of the hand.
Like this, it'll really help you to get. Oh, yes, yours may need to be blown up a little bit. Pick up the rate a little bit. All right, that's good. Cut that down to 50. One suggestion, can I get everybody's attention? One suggestion is keep your arms in a locked position. You see how Chief Petty is doing that? Good. All right, so let's go ahead. You want to start the video again? All right.
In the center of the chest. Then place the other hand on top, like this. Now keep your hands in the center of the chest and push hard, straight down. Make sure the chest moves down at least 2 inches. Then let the chest rise completely back up, like this. You should hear a clicking sound if you're pushing hard enough. Keep pushing a few more times to make sure that you have a feel for how hard you need to push. Good. If you need more time to get your Minnie Ann to click when you push on the chest, pause the DVD now and start again when you're ready.
All right, here we go. We're going to practice the pushes here. Follow along. The best thing is
let's practice several pushes in a row.
Watch her rate.
Put the heel of one hand in the center of the chest and the other hand on top of the first, like this. Start pushing hard, making sure you move the chest down at least 2 inches. Follow along with the music. The music will help you get a feel for how fast to push.
Okay, follow along with the music.
Let the chest rise all the way back up after each push.
Watch her. Follow along with what she's doing. Her rhythm up. One,
if you stay directly
two,
over
one,
the chest
two,
and keep your arms straight, it's a lot easier.
Row your foot.
Push down at least 2 inches. Listen for the click.
All
You're doing great.
I want to hear this next part. Is there anybody get the volume up on that? Because I don't think we can hear.
You're getting the feel for how to do hands-only CPR. And I want to show you how to figure out if the person really needs CPR in the first place. Let's say we've just arrived at a scene where an adult is laying on the ground. The first thing you should do is tap the person and shout something like, "Hey, are you okay? Are you okay?" If the person doesn't respond, she's not just sleeping and we better get some help, and say it like you mean it. "Hey you, call 911 now." If you're alone, you'll have to call 911 yourself. The emergency operator will ask some important questions so that help can be sent quickly and to the right place. Don't hang up the phone unless the emergency operator tells you to. Once you or someone else have called 911, you need to start CPR right away. The victim might be gasping for air. If a person doesn't respond when you tap and shout and is only breathing and gasps, that person needs CPR. Okay, let's do that again. We're going to tap and shout and get help. Are you all right? Can you hear me? Hey you, call 911 now. If she's not breathing or is only gasping, you need to start CPR. Just like you did before, put your hands in the center of the chest and push hard and fast straight down at least 2 inches.
So, watch her, listen, watch her. Keep that rhythm going.
Allow the chest to rise all the way back up after each push.
One, two, three.
If you keep your arms straight while you push, it makes it a lot easier. Keep pushing until the person starts to respond or until medical professionals take over.
It's 107 with the fire department, just so you know. That's our sweet spot. All right, so let's watch this next part if you don't mind. Okay.
Now let's practice together all the way through, from discovery of the victim to the arrival of medical professionals. Let's begin. Hey, are you okay? Are you okay? Hey you, call 911 now. If she's not breathing or is only gasping, it's time to start hands-only CPR.
Now, don't go too fast. Follow her rate. One, two, and one, two, and three, and four, and one, and two, and three, four. And
push
one,
hard and fast
two,
in the center
three.
Of the chest.
Row, row. So. Now, one of the things we're having you practice is you actually develop a muscle memory. What he does have to
allow the chest to rise all the way back up after
that's what we have in mind here. Okay? But apparently, we don't run. Alright.
If you keep your arms straight as you push, it makes it a lot easier.
Because you got to someone very
make sure the chest moves down at least 2 inches with each push.
don't be afraid to push hard.
Okay, so if you'd like, at this point in time, let's go ahead and skip ahead to the next line here real quickly. So I think everybody gets the general gist of it.
Well, that's it. When an adult needs CPR, call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest. If others are there to help, take turns pushing on the chest. Switch places every couple of minutes so that you don't get too tired. Whether you are alone or have someone to help you, it's important to continue pushing hard and fast until medical professionals take over. You've learned everything you need to help an adult who needs CPR. Call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of the chest. Your actions can only help.
Okay. All right, thank you, everybody. So, a couple things. Let's do a quick review. They don't have a terrific concept of what to do and how to save lives. You can do it. So just remember, try to keep up that row your boat. So what do you do for CPR? That's one of the things to do here. You call 911, right? And basically, push hard and fast in the middle of the chest, etc. So sometimes things happen, like you may hear a rib break sometime in some situations. And so what do you think you should do then?
Keep going,
because the person's dead without this, and you want them alive.
I was just asking one of the gentlemen over there about that, and he made a great point. He said if you're working on a 90-year-old woman who's not breathing, and she's really tiny, and because I said, are you going to push too hard? Are you going to break something? And he said, you're going to hear crackling. And you're not breaking bones, it's cartilage, is what he said. And keep going as hard as you can.
Yep.
And
that's the whole thing. Just keep going. It's under the category of just do it. There are people, by the way, who look maybe like they're breathing, but really you'll see, it's going to be so obvious when it happens, it will be very clear, but they may take sort of what we call gasping respiration, so they're going like that. Or they may even have a brief seizure. Sometimes there's not enough oxygen to have a brief, but that seizure will stop almost within seconds and don't continue on like most people have seizures. And for people who have seizures and then the seizure stops, they'll be breathing harder than usual. In this situation, people will not be breathing at all, being very abnormal, so it'll be straightforward. So generally, when it happens, you'll know what to do. Just do it, and that's sort of the message I want to get across. All right. One last thing is choking. Does choking happen out there in people?
Yes.
Oh, it does. Do you know something about this?
Yes.
Okay. And how do you handle that one?
Well, then, how it is, my husband's kind of running around and he's gasped. And you taught us to listen for that.
Yeah.
And so I listened, and he obviously was choking. It's about, I guess, almost 30 years old. Parents were not around.
Around the way, and when I heard him, I quickly just turned around and just giving my form. So here's the thing. You think about it. This part of your windpipe right here is almost like the top of the box. Remember those little kind of like flaps they had, like a wine glass or whatever. If you think about cork at the top of that thing, and underneath there is where the lungs are. Well, we've got that rib cage protecting, but what we want to do is get down under the ribs and pull up. You're going to try to get up there and sort of lean inward and upward, so you're going to pop the cork, right? That's it. And, for example, if a person now is going unconscious, then it's the same thing. You're popping the cork and doing the compression that way as well. So the point is, handling choking is really pretty easy. That's definitely first time that you're getting blood or getting
volunteers.
Okay, got it. So part of it is not even demonstrating, it's getting right behind her under ribs anywhere, her rib cages are coming up so hard. So, how do you handle choking? Pop the cork, right? How about the AED part? Go get it, right?
Turn it on.
Follow instructions. Very good. That's a lot of help. That's terrific. And then with CPR, it's basically call 911, and then basically start pumping. Okay, and do the row. So now you know how to do it for the trip. If you've caught all our city employees who continue to do it, I'm so grateful. This is terrific that all of you have learned this for your families. Take
forgiveness to you so that you can take it home so you can train others and you can blow them up for them and have them watch you. Now, you know how to do it, so you can train them. Yes.
That's all I know. I'm pushing hard enough because I don't have the quick.
Right? But part of what we're doing is you have to go here, you should go back and practice again on it. Okay? And you do have to push hard, and that's it. But that's part of the reason why we had the clicker, so you develop that kind of, they said, a muscle memory that you know how to do it. So I would actually go home and practice this a little bit more when you get a chance. But you generally know what to do here.
And you get right under this
Yep, right in the middle here.
That's where we are. Where you're involved.
Yep, right. You use that phone and actually do a compression.
All the bone.
Yep.
Just below the nipple line, and then and the crease line, and then to the lower half of the breastbone.
By the way, these tips that you have here have instructions on how to handle children and infants. There's things on AED, there are things on stroking. So the CPD tell you a whole host of things. There are, for example, we will provide breathing in certain cases like drowning, etc. We may want to remember those circumstances, and they'll teach you how to do it. But for the majority of cases, you will have to face, for your very stable life, doing the compressions only, pressing hard and fast, and little chest will make all the difference in the world. So thank you very much for becoming part of the World War II Refugee Team here at Dallas.
One last minor little thing, but I think, because this is relatively new, you can use an AED on any age person who is in cardiac arrest, from 0 to 100. It used to be they were only for grown-ups. So if you were to have a child, or even a baby, and you have the AED and the grown-up has, and you're thinking, how am I going to do this? You would just slap one on the front and one on the back and use the AED on the infant. Okay? That is important. Because if the child gets any shockable rhythm and you don't shock it, what's going to happen? They're going to die. Exactly. So if you're in a child's environment like a school, they will usually have pediatric special equipment. But the take-home message is, if all you have is grown-up pads and a small baby, use it. So any age person, the AED is fine. If you have to go back-to-back in front, go back-to-front, and make a baby sandwich, as it were, then go ahead and do that, because the AED will work for the baby. What do you think?
Well, I think
you
want to
It depends on who made the purchase at the time and the likelihood. Usually you'll use the pediatric equipment in schools and when you
write it. Apparently we don't have it in the city, but they're all over the place. That's why we're talking about
it. But it doesn't matter. If all you have is grown up, you go ahead and use it.
What's
that? That's important.
Yeah, if we could, if you would like to do a quick maybe CPR.
Oh, sure.
Quick, just a quick demo. Remember, you're in your kit. If you want to see them, you look at
the DVD. Yes, it is on the DVD. And for you all, if you're by yourself, you are going to do breaths with the baby. So it's a little bit different from the grown-up where it's compression only. But the process is the same. You're going to shake the shout. You're going to call for help. You're going to ask for the AED. And then you're going to start 30 compressions to 2 breaths CPR. And again, it's on the video. So the first thing you're going to do, a little bit hard to see, I'm going to hold it up. You're going to put your fingers right below the nipple line, and it's very hard to do on these dummies. Normally it's 2 fingers, but on these dummies, to get it to work, you pretty much have to use your thumb, all right? But the rate is the same, it's 100 to 120, 28, 29, 30, and I didn't bring a barrier, I guess I'm down here. The next thing you will do after the 30 breaths, is you will tilt the head back slightly, pinch the nose, and give 2 little pops, just enough to get chest dry. You do not need to empty your grown-up lungs into the baby, because people, freak out when it's happening. And so you would just continue with 30 to 2 compressions to breath until expert help and the AED arrives.
And again, so those are things that really are concerning for your own situation. Go ahead and look at the case tab, all that's in there.
Right.
And there's an adjustment in your kit to do what you would do for a child. So that's
right.
In there. So it's all plugged in and sort of pretty much automatic. So I'm going to do a quick review. What do we do for choking? What's choking?
Popcorn.
Okay, got it. AED? And CPR? Basically call 911 and basically begin to push hard and fast, roll chest, roll your bone, etc. So I want to thank you. And then quickly, if you wanted to make a comment about what you've done for you all.
Yeah, absolutely. Just in terms of, I appreciate y'all being willing to do this now, and I appreciate Dr. Stephanie and Dr. Miller coming out today and to show you the basics of CPR. Delphi Rescue EMS, we're in business trying to save people's lives. One of the national studies show we have increased or changed up our procedures for how we deal with cardiac arrest victims, which has greatly enhanced our ability to save people's lives. So one key component that's been missing is identifying and teaching bystander CPR. When someone dies and they go down, brain death, they start beginning within just a couple of minutes. Our average response time, which is a good one by national standards, is between 5 and 6 minutes. If you get a big building like this, it may take us 2 or 3 more minutes when we pull up at the door to actually get to the victim. When you do CPR on someone or use the AED on them, you at the very least give us a viable victim that we can now do something. Our medics can use the skills and the equipment and the training that we've given them, and you greatly enhance our ability to bring this person back to life and help them walk away at the end of the day after they leave the hospital perfectly normal, living a healthy, productive life. So thank you.
So take home message here with one is that there's no way a professional rescuer can get to you in the 4 or 5 minutes in which permanent brain damage can occur. So it's up to you to save your friends, your loved ones, etc. by knowing what you learned today. Two is that we've got to be models. We have to make sure we're champions out there to make sure in our district, where we are, our schools, our workplaces. I'm glad you have this example for everyone else to make sure this gets going. The reason why is that we are now ranking as one of the highest survival rates in the country right now for the situations in which there is a bystander in CPR. The problem is, we're very low, maybe out of 118 cities looked at, I think, I don't know where we come in, like 109, 110, in terms of the frequency of bystander CPR by the average citizen. So if we were able to do that, we would clearly have the highest save rate in the world if we could get double, for example, the chances of someone doing it to 25 or 30%, we get up to 50 or 60% in cases where it's reasonable. You would see this would absolutely be your favorite place to have your heart attack. And
why don't we so well in people having
well, it's a matter of, I think, that the average person basically thinks it's hard to do. What you just learned today, it's not that hard to do or hard, and how we can do it in a very short period of time. So there's been a resistance. One thing we are doing, we're putting into the school system, we're getting into workplaces such as TI is working on now getting every one of their employees trained as we did here at the city. So we've got to get other businesses, other places, and with the average person to learn CPR. So wherever you have an opportunity to get out into your community, take your kids along and tell people to learn it.
So you're saying fewer people as a percentage know CPR in Dallas than in other cities?
Absolutely, that's true. So that's one. That's our major brain living step in terms of saving lives right now. That we've done. We've outshot almost everybody else for a poster job.
And they just been more other cities been more active in training.
Well, part of it, places started, yes, and they started for yes. When I was in Seattle back in the 1970s, we put it in the school systems in the early 70s. So that time I left here in 1982, 83, we had over 200,000 half million residents, over half of those training for CPR. And they started in about 50 to 60% of cases when I arrived, they were doing CPR. That's what they're still doing today. We've got a little catching up to do before I'm getting up. Okay. Thank you so much.
Dr. Pepe,
yes.
Of the city employees, how many have we trained?
Well, first of all, we do all the police departments, you know, that's a large percentage. But the rest of them, we trained the balance of the 13,000 a couple of years ago. And people come in now. We actually have been trained in CPR to do this. So really, it should probably be 90 to 95% of our employees have received it.
Now, I've got a couple of kids coming up in the next few weeks, actually. I'm doing water utilities next week. I'm doing some of the security personnel here at City Hall next week. And I'm doing the city retirement fund folks towards the end of the month. So
it's not only the folks that work at City Hall, but actually people that are out in the field. So
right.
They can help as well.
I'm happy to come out and I will work with anybody here in terms of, you know, in division or department.
concerned, just give me a call and I'm very happy to do that.
We appreciate you. This is so important. It's, it happens all the time as we have more and more people downtown or in the Trinity or just folks walking. You know, that could happen, and it's better to be prepared.
And it's actually good business, too, to be in places like that. There are
times. If you're going to have one, yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Okay. I have three questions. And maybe I didn't hear it, but that when they were, like, a lot of people in the crowd, it's better to ask to move back because, I'm just asking a question.
Oh, I think if you have a larger crowd, it's, I don't know if there's people in your way to try to be reactive, but yeah, they just back out of the way to do the compression or get the AED put out. I think that's all that is. Sometimes people can actually help you, and again, be able to say, does anybody know where an AED is? Yes, go get it, please, right now. Okay, you call 911 and tell them we're fixing new CPR right now. Those are things that take advantage of the crowd as well. Plus, guess what? Are you going to get tired of doing this? You already learned it. So you got to have people who will switch off, et cetera. Even if, let's say, there's someone who does not do it, you can get them, you can show them how to do it a little bit and get it going. Take advantage of people if you can in the same life. By the way, can you get in trouble for doing this?
No.
Why not? Because there's just the merit law that protects you with AED and CPR that say that you know, we encourage people to do this, so just do it.
The people who wake up with a sore chest are very glad to have a sore chest. We have never had a survivor complain about their chest being sore after CPR. You cannot hurt these people. They are going to die if you don't do something. So do the best you can. You can only help them. And if we can prove that time and time again.
And will you take people every week? No. But this may be the only chance they have. Right.
The other two questions, one was already answered regarding the city employees, and thank you very much, and Ms. Soom, thank you very much.
Yes.
But the other one was, I did ask the chief if we are obtaining a certificate for doing this demonstration or this, and he said no. Why or why not?
Well, the answer is that the Heart Association provides certificates for people who have to do this as a job requirement. So if you have a duty to act, it's actually more extensive course, you know, that versus all of us doing another ethical duty to act, okay, for that. But I do provide Tara and Veronica has one. We do start saying that as I was the head of the for Dallas County and City of Dallas. As emergency services, I can provide a car payment and complete the parking
lot. I get your
certificate. 35,000.
This is a county product, so there's no way the Heart Association could verify that somebody who bought the kit actually did it. So they don't put a wallet card in here. But you don't need a wallet card. All you need is a confidence to do what you learned.
Reason why I was asking is because of that. And is there, like, I mean, you know, because you want them to train, you want, like, say that we're in a community meeting and we want to do
it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Tuffy, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Have a good day. Thank you. Ms. Rios, we'll take our afternoon speakers in the morning.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're going to begin your end of open microphone speakers, Martha H. Du Bois and Walter Vermes. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You will state your name and address for the record and address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Martha H. Du Bois. Not present, Walter Velez. Not present, Osamba Lunks. Not present, William Hopkins. Is not present, Freddy Delgado. Not present, Tom Giddens. Not present, Trina Trish. Ms. Trish will be followed by LaCoya London and Robert Ciccarelli.
Good morning, everyone. Trina Trish, Dallas City. I'm speaking on shelters and also corruption. This is from the Apartment Guide, 179 Weekly. All bills paid, for utilities, free high-speed internet, fully furnished, free phone, free cable, and HBO, built-in microwaves, and HDTV available, pool and spa, laundry facilities, low monthly rates, 1 and 2 bedroom floor plans. Again, that's from 179 Weekly, and it can be $605 a month, all bills paid, and you have people in shelters getting checks for $1,000, $2,600 and more. That's been there for years. Seeing caseworkers. I'm sure the people of Mr. Griggs' district will want to know, why is the city still paying for people who've been living in shelters and getting a check every month that can afford to live in here? I do know city employees who have helped their elderly parents get apartments to pay rent, which would then free in money so that you can provide the goods and the services that we need. We have this, prices starting at $415, Richardson ISD, stainless finish appliances, fall bamboo and stained concrete flooring, WD connections in all units, Wi-Fi business center, remote control fans and linings, 3 swimming pools, tanning bed, fitness center, pet play park, children's play area, free after school program, October 1st passed, and where are they? And they just got paid. They need to be paying rent. So then why are shelters filled with people getting checks and the government knows about it? Because most shelters are affiliated with hospitals who are abusing poor people by giving them drugs that they don't need. As far as safety is concerned, I have given you specifics about safety violations in shelters, and the bottom line is, if you have not moved because you are responsible for the safety of all people, including the poor, then if something happens, you are liable. Penn State. That's all I want to say. Kudos to Ms. Davis, who mentioned that felons can vote. Let's get the word out. And Mr. Caraway, kudos, because he just exposed the way that we can do it. People are perishing for lack of knowledge. It's time for somebody to give them some knowledge. I'm sure city employees and everybody else will welcome the free up in the money so you can have the budget to take care of the libraries, the schools, the arts, and your districts. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker is LaCoya London. Not present, Robert Ciccarelli. If not present, Gwayne Wooten. Not present, Debbie Castilleja. Is not present. Mr. Mayor, that concludes your speakers.
Thank you. It is 10:58 a.m., October 3rd. The City Council will now go into closed session. A session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. Paz Energy LLC v. Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board et al. Thank you.